Empower Radio presents The Farkas Files, an exploration of energy, metaphysics, and the paranormal with David Franklin Farkas. The Farkas Files. The truth is in here, somewhere. Here's your host, David Franklin Farkas.
Good evening. Thanks for being with us whenever in your week you listen to the show, wherever you are in the world. It's one of the wonders of having this kind of a show. People listen to us all kinds of crazy times. I'm so glad that you're with us. And my guest tonight is Robin Clare, who does some really interesting and kind of different work. So we're looking forward to that conversation. But first, tonight's metaphysical musing. And as you know, I often have these talk about things that are going on around me, because that's really how you learn about metaphysics, is examining your life and what's going on around you, and looking at it through a different lens, looking at it through the lens of metaphysical principles. So I learned a long time ago that there's something which just the words just came into my mind as a name for it, metaphysical irony. A situation in which you're focusing on what you want in a particular way with a lot of energy, so, and repeatedly. So you're trying to manifest something. You might be doing it with prayer or affirmations or whatever technique you're using, but you're trying to focus on something and get what you want, get a change in your life. And you do get something. But it's the opposite or strangely twisted from what it was you thought you were going to get. So typically this happens because there's a pun involved. So if there's any way for the universe to clarify, and you know, the universe is always giving you an opportunity to clarify what you want so you can get what you really want. So if you say something, but there's two interpretations of it, the universe will usually give you the one you don't want just to show you that you don't want it. So you can go, no, not that. What I meant was, and then you can clarify your statement and your focus. But it doesn't have to be a pun. Sometimes it is just a different way of getting what you said you wanted. So I live in a small college town, and there's always a lot of conversation by the spokespeople of the university and the Chamber of Commerce about getting more attention, getting more people to know about our little downtown and the businesses and what's going on here. And it's a sweet place. People should come here. And spring break starts next weekend, but this past weekend, there was an event that happens every year, and two local bars that cater to students who have an Irish theme do what they call the Blarney Blast. And what they do is basically start the kids binge drinking at 11 o'clock in the morning. So the police department has negotiated with them that it's only 100 students for each seating of two seatings, one at 11 and one at 1 o'clock. So only 400 students start drinking early in the day. But here we are in the age of social media. So all over the town, in every student housing, off-campus student housing place, kids start drinking early in the day because it's the Blarney Blast, and that's what we're supposed to do. We're going to wear green, and we're going to drink, and we're going to be rowdy, which, you know, within certain limits is just kids blowing off steam. And every year there's some confrontation somewhere between the police and the kids when, you know, I think last year there were hundreds of kids or 1,000 kids in one apartment building, and the police had to come down and say, no, you can't do that. That's private property and you can't be here. And oh, by the way, all you kids that are under 21 are under arrest for underage drinking. So that kind of stuff goes on. I think last year there were 7 kids arrested for messing around with the cops. This year, And it happens with social media because people text each other and go, oh, there's this great party going on right over here. You know, people show up. This time, there was a group of 4,000 students. And when the dust had settled, 73 people had been arrested, three policemen had been injured, and it was a ridiculous mess, which isn't a wonderful thing to happen and is annoying. However, rather than just being a local news story, it got picked up by the Reuters news agency, which is the international news feed, much like Associated Press is in the United States. And I got up the next morning, and one of the things I do is look at a news feed on my Android phone. And in the international stories was a story about the riot at our college campus. So I Googled it and found page after page after page of stories all over the United States and a few in Europe about this incredible riot that happened on a college campus in Massachusetts and what the police did. So I just sat there shaking my head saying, you know, the town and the chamber and the college are always saying that they want more attention. And now they got it. I don't think this is what they intended. But boy, did we get a lot of attention. And unfortunately, it's negative attention. And that's what the town and the campus will be associated with for a while. So you got to watch out what you ask for. And you got to watch out how you do it. And notice when you get what you asked for, but in a way that you didn't expect, which caused a result that wasn't what you asked for. I've got loads of funny stories about things I asked for that didn't quite work out that way. The short and most notorious one is that I came back from my shamanic apprentice, and what I would say to people is, I just want to do energy work. I just want to do energy work for a living. I love doing energy work. And within a few weeks, I was hired as an energy auditor for the local utility, which led to a 10-year career in energy conservation doing, in quotation marks, energy work, to which my response was, very funny. Thanks for the job. I needed the job, but very funny. Anyway, so that's tonight's metaphysical musing. And let's find our guest. Robin, you with us?
I am, David. Thank you.
So my guest is Robin Clare. Her website is Clarity, Clare-ity.com. And you do some fascinating stuff and an amazing combination of things. So why don't you give us a little overview, but then I want to do what I usually do, which asks you, how did you wind up doing this?
That's great. Thank you. So I am a spiritual messenger. And what I do is I connect individuals to their spirit guides, angels, and deceased loved ones. And so in the last couple of years, I've accepted those gifts that I have to do that. But prior to that, I worked the first 25 years of my career in corporate America as a strategic and operating business planner. And then I also, in the past 7 or 8 years, opened 3 spiritual retreat centers. So I have this very strong business background. And this year, early in meditation, I asked, what would you like me to do next? And the guidance I received was to merge the two. And I thought, how interesting. And so what I've been doing now is working with what I call spiritually motivated individuals. So someone doesn't have to be a healer or, you know, whatever a naturopath. As long as they're open to the fact that when I'm in a business meeting with them, helping them plan their business, that it's them, me, and their spiritual guides, then I can work with them. Because I love to open the conversation to include their spiritual support team, and I am just always amazed at how creative the spiritual realm is from a business perspective. And, you know, maybe if I really thought about that, I wouldn't be surprised, because think about how much of the world's business, probably all of it, is based on intuition and creativity and inspiration. And really, where does that come from? But the university, you know, the universal energies. And so they're working with me to help others now.
Fantastic. So
yeah,
in many ways, I'm your perfect client.
Okay, great. Welcome aboard. I said, welcome aboard.
There we go. And one of the, I want to get back to what your walkabout was, but one of the issues that I've seen for myself and a lot of other people that are doing this is that you have a way that you want to help people.
Mm-hmm.
And you're good at that. But you want to make a living at it because you don't want to have a day job, which will take you away from being able to help people with the thing that you're good at, that you love to do, that helps people.
Yes.
And so you wind up running a business without having any business skills at all, and
right,
stumbling through that whole process. So
I would agree with you.
Huh?
I would totally agree with you, and for multiple reasons. One, it does take business discipline to run a business. We forget that. So, you know, many of us who come into these, into this spiritual and wellness industry or whatever we're in, and we're so anxious to serve that we forget that we're really running a business. And, you know, most small businesses, one of the major reasons why they fail is because they don't have a business plan that they're following. And what I love about the idea of having a business plan with, and you'll love this because it really corresponds to what you said at first, in order for spirit or the universe to provide you with what you need, they have to know what you want. And so by creating an effective business plan in your business, spiritual or not, then the universe can conspire to bring you the resources that you need to have abundance in your life. But if you're not clear about what it is that you're looking to achieve, then they really can't help you. And then they do what you were saying. They'll start like maybe sending you what they think you said you wanted, you know, so then you can try again. And, but if you're very, very clear about who's your ideal client and, you know, what are your revenue targets and how are you going to market your product? Then they're like, yes, we can do this. We can help. And so I think it's that business discipline. And another reason in the spiritual industry, I think that this is ancient. I think this is lifetimes of idea that if you're in this type of work, then it's really almost a sin to ask for money because you're working for the divine. And yet everything that I know and all the conversations that I've had with the divine, they are very much aware that we live in a very material world that requires money and that they don't want anyone having hardship, especially people that are serving them. And so this whole idea that I can't charge the right amount or how do I charge right for my services is just something that is inbred in this industry. And so I'm one of the people that's working to get people to understand that, you know, there's a lot of talented people and we're really, really helping people. And so we have to honor the skills and the talent and the support that we're bringing to our clients.
Well, it's also a misinterpretation when people say that whole thing about not being paid. Priests aren't paid, but they have a place to live and a stipend.
That's right.
All the other things. Monks mm-hmm. and nuns live in their quarters and they don't pay for anything. The shaman in an indigenous village has everything taken care of. They don't have to build
right
their hut. They don't have to go to war. They don't have to hunt because they're working all the time to tend to the metaphysical and spiritual and healing needs of the community, and they just handle all the other stuff for them. So, you know, my joke is I'm the village shaman for the global village, and you can't bring me a chicken, which means we'll use PayPal.
Yes. I like that.
And, you know, I can't have you come over to the hut, so we'll use Skype.
Yeah.
So we're doing the same kinds of things, but as soon as you put that intermediate step in there of using money instead of barter, you know, instead of services or some other things, it suddenly looks different. And I think particularly in Christian perspectives, there's a lot of things that can be interpreted as you shouldn't charge for this, but they don't acknowledge the part of, we want you to do this, but how are you going to get taken care of?
Yeah, when I had one of my first retreat center, I remember some man calling me very irate and saying, I can't believe that you're charging an entrance fee for this spiritual event. And I very politely said to him, well, if you can tell me how do I pay the rent and all the expenses to run this event without charging a fee, I'd be happy to hear your suggestions. Mm-hmm. And he's like, oh, you have expenses? And I'm like, yes,
right.
You know, right. I don't own this building, you know. And so that kind of, he's like, I'm sorry. Like, he then apologized because he, you know, he didn't realize that, you know, he realized that I had expenses to pay.
Right. But, you know, it's like expecting your doctor or the car mechanic to work for free.
Right. Right. And,
you know,
and
they're providing a service. They're doing an intervention. You see it as being mundane, but it's the same situation. They've got expenses both for the business and their personal life, and they need to make a living. So you need their service. They do it for you. You pay them so they can pay other people to take care of the things that they need. Mm-hmm. It's pretty murky.
I also think it takes time too. I think it takes I think it's in any business, you know, as you begin to have mastery in your work, then you're more confident asking for the money. And it takes in this field, in, you know, spiritual work, I think it takes a while to have that sense of confidence that you're really being of true service. You know, it's almost as if when you finally get to the point when you know it's not you, that's when you can charge money.
Right.
When you know that you're just the vessel for this energy and this healing to take place, that's when you begin to develop mastery, when you're not worried about what impact you're personally making.
Right.
And that's when I think that's when you grow, the confidence comes.
Well, tell us your walkabout. How did you, there are two pieces to it, obviously. One is that you became an MBA and had that whole part to your career and your life. But also, at what point did the spiritual gifts show up and how did you nurture those?
Yeah, I would say that I always had almost like an intuitive knowing and a spiritual gift. Like, I would show up when people were ill. I would, you know, do different things. But in the first, I always call it the first half of my adult life, I had two personalities. One was my corporate, you know, MBA personality. How can I get ahead? How can I get promotions? But then I also had this other part of my personality, which I called the spiritual warrior. So I had the corporate warrior and the spiritual warrior. And so on the weekends, I would run to all kinds of events and read all kinds of books about past lives, shamanism, you name it. I was like, oh, this is so cool. And then about 22 years into that life, I began to tire of these two personalities. And I was looking for my authentic personality. Like, how could I blend this? So I actually stood on my deck for almost a year asking the same question every night, which was, how can I be of greater service to mankind? And I knew that there was a being standing next to me, like an energy, but I really was so green then that I wouldn't even look. You know, I wouldn't even turn my head. I'm like, okay, I know there's someone standing here, but I'm not looking. Like, I'm scared, right?
I might see somebody.
I might see somebody, right. And so over the next 8 years, well, when I stood there for a year, what I did is I actually surrendered my life to be of divine service. And 8 years later, when I was writing my first book, I would come to know that the being standing next to me was Yeshua ben Yosef, or that's the Hebrew Aramaic name for Jesus. And I would come to know that it was him standing there, and he was listening, and he said, oh, I have a job for you. And so 8 years later, I would be told and asked to write my first book, which is called Messiah Within, which is a channeled book from Yeshua to the Jewish people, asking to see him as a rabbi, as he was in the Old Testament, and to accept his teaching so that we could be one step closer to world peace. Mm-hmm. And I had a really difficult time with that. I carried a lot of the persecution complex that the Jewish people had had known for 2,000 years. I really had it bad. I couldn't even look at a picture of Jesus without like turning my head. And I'm like, I can't do this. And at the time, my husband was studying to be a rabbi. And so it was like, really, me? Oh, come on. You know, can I have a different job? And but I wrote it. And now I enjoy this relationship with Yeshua as a channel for him that I'm working. I wrote my second book last year, which is in the editing process. And now I'm writing my third book, but he's very much a part of the work that I'm doing and comes through to talk to people in groups and in individual sessions. And, you know, he's really the ultimate teacher of oneness. And that's my personal mission, is to know oneness with the divine in this lifetime and to teach that to others. And, really the master of oneness.
You just ask the small questions and come up with the small goals for yourself, right?
Yeah, that's it. I don't really have, I don't have big plans for myself. But, that's what happens when you stand out on your deck for a year, right? You're committed. I committed to this journey, and, I'm 100% committed to it. And, over the course of those 8 years and then another two, I had to go through so much personal healing work in order to be able to, channel this magnificent master on the planet. And I'm still doing it. I'm still every day, is a healing for me. And as I grow in my gifts and, what I will actually be doing in a year from now, I have no idea. I just know that this continues to open because I continue to be open to healing my wounds and becoming a greater servant to the divine.
What a perfect place to take our break, and then we'll come back and talk about what you offer to people. My guest tonight is Robin Clare of clarity.com, clarity.com, and we will be talking more about what she offers people and how she does what she does. But first, we're going to take a little break for some wonderful messages that will always give me the giggles. And I hope Robin may not have heard some of these, so hopefully give you the giggles as well. We'll be back shortly, unless we get taller, here on the Farkas Files. The truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. Don't go nowhere.
Sassy! Sassy! this week's episode, Rattlesnake at the Pond.
Oh, Johnny, skipping rocks at the pond sure is fun.
Hey, look, a moving stick.
That ain't a stick. That's a rattlesnake.
Sassy, we're in danger.
Good idea, Sassy. Go get Mr. Gunderson. You will in a second, but first you'd like to tell us something we may not know about animal shelters in the United States?
It's getting close, Sassy.
Approximately 8 million pets enter shelters each year? The majority of which are in shelters because of owner-related issues that the animals have no control over?
Sassy the rattlesnake! Save us, Sassy!
What, Sassy? You wish you were videotaping this? Sassy!
Sassy is brought to you by the Ad Council and the ShelterPetProject.org. Remember, adopt!
This heavyweight bout is about to begin. The challenger wears white trunks with a blue stripe, and the champ is wearing, looks like an examination gown from the doctor's office. And from the back, we can... Ooh, that's not pretty. Champ, what's with the crazy getup?
I've got to take care of my family.
Yeah, so?
Well, when you love your family, you got to go in and get those important medical screenings. A lot of potentially deadly diseases can be treated if you catch them in time.
So you wear the examination gown because...
Because I'm a real man. Real men take care of their families and get those tests. Real men wear gowns.
Okay, champ. Good luck. Here we go. The champ's not wasting any time. It's over. This fight is over. Champ, you barely broke a sweat. Any words for your fans out there?
Remember, go to ahrq.gov for a list of the tests they need to get and when to get them.
What was that web address again?
ahrq.gov. And remember, real men wear gowns.
Go to ahrq.gov. This message brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services, AHRQ, and the Ad Council.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
Now back to the Farkas Files with David Franklin Farkas on Empower Radio.
And we're back. And still laughing about the banana slug. We're back with my guest, Robin Clare. And what I'd like to do is just have you talk about what you offer to people and how you approach things, because you've got both personal services and professional services.
Yeah, great. Thank you. So I, both my personal and professional services, they both begin with the place where I access the spiritual information. And that is what is called the Akashic Records. And the Akashic Records are, for simplicity's sake, the home of our soul when it's not in our physical body. When I began on our journey, you know, I immediately bought into the fact that we're an energetic being having a human being experience, meaning that we're a soul having a physical body experience, and that we came here to learn things and to understand, or perhaps clear some karmic debt, however you want to word it. But then I started to say, okay, so then what happens to my soul when my body is no longer alive? And so that took me to the Akashic Records, which houses our past, present, and future lives. And our past lives being this moment 1 second ago backwards, and our future is 1 second ahead forward.
Right.
So I read the Akashic Records when I want to understand why someone's soul came into their physical body and what did they intend to do, and how can they fulfill that destiny? And so I look at relationships with people on the personal side. I look at relationships and what's going on in their lives. And my favorite part that always blows them away is when I tell them that we chose our parents.
Mm-hmm.
That always gets them. Because then they're like, what? What do I do that for? And then on the professional side, I use the Akashic Records to see if they had a mission for coming here, and they're trying to fulfill that mission, then how can they fulfill that in their professional life as well? Because I do believe that we all have a personal mission, and then ideally we're living that personal mission in our professional life, our personal life, and our community life. And when we can do that, then we've really led a fulfilling life. So I would say to you as an example, my personal mission is to become one with the divine. And now I get to do that. I've tried to live that in how I am in the world. I teach other people about that, and I show them how to do it. And then I have done a significant amount of community building around that, of providing events for people and learning experiences and things like that.
It's, I'm sitting here obviously asking myself those questions. And,
yeah.
and frequently the answer I get is, I came here to fix stuff.
To fix stuff, right.
Fix stuff. And I like fixing stuff.
I like that. And so can you see that, like, in your personal life, that you're fixing things, and in your professional life and in community? Because I think you'll see that. I think if you really stepped back and looked at mm-hmm. your experiences, you would see that that's what you're doing. Even this radio show is fixing people, because right. they're learning. It's a wonderful way to reach thousands of people at one time.
Yeah, it's and part of my background is I was a shop teacher, and I've done all kinds mm-hmm. of other stuff where mm-hmm. I learned how to fix things.
Yeah.
So if I was coming to you as a client.
Yes.
What would be the kinds of personal services that I might be able to choose from? And if I was mm-hmm. going to ask you for business consulting, what would that process look like?
Yeah, so on the personal side, there's two things that there's three things I'm focusing on. One is these clarity Akashic record readings, when we're mm-hmm. when we're opening the records to see what's going on in your life, what's going on, what I love about the Akashic records is they have a lot of integrity. Because it's your soul talking before your mind, your thought, your thoughts and your emotions get a hold of it, mm-hmm. get a hold of the process. And so it's really a very pure perspective of your life. And so I do those readings for people. And I just got a call from a woman today who said, I connected her to this community where she lives, because the record said that she needed to have a new home, like a new community. And she called to tell me that she went and it just changed her life. And she wanted to say thank you. And so that was very exciting. But I also do two other things in my personal practice. One is called the Heart Temple Ceremony. And this is something that happened to me on my journey, that I was given a permission to do this healing of the heart. What Yeshua shared with me is that everyone on the planet has a broken heart. Some are shattered, some are just cracked. But once that happens, we start giving pieces of our heart away. And so through this ceremony, energetically, we bring back the pieces of the heart. We go through a forgiveness process with the people that have them, and then we sew them back in through this golden thread, with this golden thread that's on loan to me from the angelic realm. And so I do that in groups, which I love. I just did that in Philadelphia last weekend. And the third is I teach a 3-part series called Divinely Guided Living. And it's about teaching people to be able to do what, to live the kind of life that I live, being divinely guided. And so it's three parts: learn to access spirit, learn to discern messages from spirit, and then learn to live with spirit every moment of every day. And so mm-hmm. I teach that, and that's fun, and I enjoy that. And then, of course, I'm a writer, an author. And then, so that's what's happening in my personal practice. And then when I go to my private practice, my program is called Planning for Success, and it's creating business plans for spiritually motivated people. And it's a 12-step process, a 12-step consulting gig where we look at, what's your personal brand? Who's your ideal client? What's your product? What's your profit projection? What's your marketing plan? Everything you should look at when you're starting a business. And then at the end, we create a actual business plan for them. And one of the things I love about this program is that I'm doing it with my daughter, and she's a 23-year-old successful corporate business person. So she has that really young perspective on business, which I love. Mm-hmm. And so we call it a seasoned and fresh approach to business because
I like
she's
it.
Got that, right? And then I have the experience. And so, she sees the business world differently than me, but she, as much as I honor and respect her perspective, she does the same for me. So it's nice.
Very
and I think
cool.
that benefits my clients. Yeah.
And how wonderful to be able to do this with your daughter.
Yeah, wonderful. Yeah, we're really learning a lot from each other. Like, she tries to tell me that it's okay to have a business when she and I are meeting, watch TV, have the PC on, talk to each other. And I'm like, no,
right.
Just look me in the eye and talk to me only. And she's like, oh my God, we can do all these other things. And I'm like, there's the difference, right? I like to focus and do that, and then I'm busy multitasking.
Right. My daughter is a freshman in college, and I remember when she was, junior high school or high school, and her mom would watch her, managing three different kinds of social media, watching TV and doing homework at the same time.
And
think that, she was doing some terrible thing to her daughter by not limiting all of it. And I would watch her and go, don't you see that she's wired completely differently? I'm just sitting here in amazement at what this kid can do.
Yeah.
And it's that difference between looking at it and saying, this is different. I don't understand this because I can't do this way. But isn't mm-hmm. it wonderful? Versus, I can't do this way, so it must be wrong and scary.
Well, one other funny little story. We were in the airport. I was traveling with my kids to visit my mother. And you could see, everyone of our generation was using the voice text part, of the texting, pressing that thing, talking away. And then all the kids are like, with their thumbs, going a mile a minute. I'm like, oh, there's a big difference, too. And my kids are like, don't do voice text. It's mortifying. And I'm like, I'm sorry, but I got to do this fast.
I was really good at thumb texting when there were real keyboards, but as soon as mm-hmm. they disappeared and we have to do it on the virtual keyboards on the screen, we're like, no, not so much.
mm-hmm. Yeah. So there is a huge difference. But what I'm loving too, though, to get back on subject, is how extraordinarily special these young people are mm-hmm. and how they really get this. I was sharing with someone today that I feel like, our generation in the spiritual community was building a foundation for them to be able to really bring in, usher in world peace and usher in this age of enlightenment. I think we're just building the foundation, and they'll be able to take it from there. And I'm just excited to be part of that and watching that. And I have another child, Garrett. He's 17, and he's just an extraordinary photographer. And what he can see through that lens, and who he is as a person, I'm just really excited to see. He travels the world, going to different places as it's his hobby. And I'm just like, oh, these kids are just amazing.
Yep. And then there's the next generation after that, the little ones that are coming in, the crystal children.
Yeah, the amazing.
Who are much more monk-like. They will just sit quietly taking it all in ways that creep some people out, but they're so telepathic that they already know what everybody's saying and going to say. They don't need to have lots of conversations. And they will be the ones that ground that energy, that hold that energy as the planet changes.
Mm-hmm. And that's what it's interesting. In a lot of the private sessions I've been having lately, we have an entire new generation of children, or an entire new population of children with children on the autism spectrum. And
yes.
a lot of the sessions I've been having have been with people that are now, being asked to become responsible to address this idea of, you know, the youngest autistic children are now young adults. And what are we doing? And if we are not ready to recognize them, to be able to communicate with them, I mean, they're working at such a higher light level than we are. And
right.
If we can't rise to their level of light, where it's almost like we're living in their world, how are they going to live in our world as adults? And so some of the sessions I have been having recently, a lot actually, have been with people who are in positions to really begin to look at legislation and benefits and communities to be able to keep these light workers, which they're extraordinary light workers, to keep them safe and well until the energies of the world rise enough to be able to be with them. And I'm excited to see how that's going to play out.
It's one of the things about those kids is that they're misunderstood because they're different.
Yeah.
And so if a child speaks later than the marker that the clinicians are looking for, they say that there's a delay and they start doing an intervention concern that this kid has a problem. If the kid's telepathic, they have no reason to talk.
Right.
They already know everything that's going to be said. They already know that most people are lying to them or trying to manipulate them, and they're really mm-hmm. not interested. And they're talking to kids on the other side of the planet.
Yeah. And certainly to each other, right? You know,
right.
that they're just really extraordinary. And I think that, you know, the parents of these children, again, these children chose their parents, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I think once the parents really catch on to that, and I think there are many more of the parents are understanding how unique and special their children are versus how different they are. And so I think that there's a lot of nurturing of them going on now. And I'm just concerned that there's so many of them and we need to care for them just like we would care for any other population of the planet.
Right. There's a classic story, and I thought it was, you know, one of the urban legends until I met somebody who actually was there, about a kid like that who didn't talk, was delayed. And all he did all day at preschool was build stuff and knock it down. And he was totally gleeful about knocking stuff down. And one of the workers there had a kid who was telepathic. And she said, please come in and talk to this kid because I know he's really smart. And I know that if he doesn't start talking soon, he's going to get caught up in the system. So in walks, you know, 6'4" black guy, sits on the floor and starts having a telepathic conversation with the kid, who's totally relieved that there's somebody we can really talk to. And he says, you know, I know you're smart. You know you're smart. But everyone else is concerned about you because you're not talking and they expect you to be talking by now. So if you don't start talking soon, they're going to do bad things to you. So I know it's slow and I know they're lying and I know all of that stuff, but you really got to do this or it's going to make your life miserable. And of course, the kid was talking in full sentences within a couple of days. But then he said, everyone wants to know what your thing with building stuff and knocking it down is. And the kid got very full of himself and looked at him with pride and said, I am a catapult builder.
Wow.
I've been doing it for centuries.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's terrific.
He knew who he was. He knew what he does. He was doing his version of it for the moment.
I find that a lot too, David. I find that, for example, tonight I was talking to a woman who was selling essential oils. And very clearly it came through the records that she was a medicine woman for many, many lifetimes and that they were welcoming her back to her roots. And that they said that because now that she knows that, like she wanted to make recommendations to people, but she always hesitated because she would think, what do I know, right? And they said, we want you to understand that you know more than most people because you've been working with plants for lifetimes. And that if you now know that and you gather the confidence that you need, you'll be able to make recommendations that will really help heal people. And she's like, okay. Like she was all excited now because she wanted to make those recommendations, but she felt very limited in what she thought she knew.
Right.
And I see that all the time. I see that many of the roles that we have in this lifetime are just continuations of our skills that we've had in other roles. And that's why sometimes it's easy and sometimes it's frustrating because sometimes they were good experiences and sometimes they were not so good.
Right.
Right. And so we're like, oh, back at that again. But I think for the most part, when people really understand what their past was and how it's impacting their present moment and their future. And I've only had in the Akashic Records, I had talked about going to the future. And I've only had like a couple instances where they talked about real future lives. And those were typically for parents of children who needed to understand how to nurture them because their children were going to make a significant impact to the future of the world through medicine or something like that. And they needed to understand their children better and how to nurture them. So that was very exciting.
Yeah, the difficulty with the future stuff is that all you can even in the records, since the future isn't there yet, you can say if this continues the way it's going now without a change in direction, this is the outcome.
Yeah.
And it's important to understand that because people, you know, it's the old fortune teller thing, and all you can do is give a warning.
Yeah, or just show them that this, if you choose this path, you can. I had a woman who was a researcher for a disease, and she actually got the disease. And they were very clear in the records. They said, this was training. And you can look at it as training. And if you accept it, that it was training, we will get you a transplant. And if you don't, you won't be here very long. And so she obviously took the training route, you know, that this was data for her. And then she had the transplant and she lived. So, you know, they'll say things like that going forward to make you understand why things happen in your life.
Right.
A lot of things happen for us because it is training. It's something that we need to understand so that we can move to the next level of our life journey.
Yeah, I find a lot of abuse scenarios in childhood are exactly that kind of thing. The only way for that that person to understand what they need to know to be compassionate later in life is to go through it themselves in childhood.
Yes. I found that last year I did two workshops with a friend of mine for breast cancer survivors. And every single one of those women in those two rooms had a significant role that they were playing going forward.
Yeah.
Whether it was with their family, in the community, in the government, in business, they would not have been able to make their impact that they're having if they had not gone through the breast cancer scenario.
Right. Yeah. Doesn't make it easy, even if you understand what's going on.
No, it doesn't. But I think when you can see it, I think they finally saw it from that perspective. So then they could heal and be a survivor. Right.
They can let go of the story and just, okay, I needed to do this. Now I'm done. What do I need to do to complete this?
Yeah.
So we just went right through an entire hour in a heartbeat.
I know.
Here. what a fun time. We really must do this again.
Yeah, that would be lovely.
I would
Thank
love
you.
To do that. And I have my own personal questions for you, so I'll be in touch anyway.
Okay, great.
My guest tonight is Robin Clare. Her website is Clarity, Clarity.com. And she does all that cool stuff she just described to you. So if that fits what you're looking for, if you're somebody doing a spiritually oriented business, or you would like one of her readings, get in touch with her because she does incredible work. Thanks so much for being on the show.
Yes, David, thank you for having me.
My pleasure. And if any of this has made you curious about this strange guy, David, you can find out more about me at househealing.com. And cleverly hiding on the contact tab is every conceivable technology to get in touch with me, including a scheduling calendar. I do a 20-minute free assessment to see what's going on in your situation or with a person or a place or whatever the problem happens to be, and see how my work might be helpful. If you're looking for other shows of the Farkas Files to listen to, please go to thefarkasfiles.com. Again, cleverly hiding in plain view. You'll find the archive and all the background about the show. For those of you that aren't aware of it, empowerradio.com has an app for both flavors of smartphones so that you can listen to the show from your smartphone in real time if you want to catch the show at 9 p.m. and that's tricky or difficult for you. One of the things that I really love about doing this is knowing all the different ways that people plug into this. And one of the sweet things that happens for me is somebody will friend me on Facebook or show up some other way on social media and then say, you know, I've been listening to your show for months and months and it makes a difference in my life. And that's very special. I mean, how cool is it to be here and have wonderful conversations with people I'm curious about and have it make a difference to other people? So I am very grateful that I get to do that with you. And I hope you will be with us again next week. So until next week, this is David Franklin Farkas for the Farkas Files. Truth is in here somewhere on Empower Radio. See you next week.